Welcome to Star Fielders On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I've run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Justin Miner had a join us for a podcast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, and the call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall at gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. Also, I have a personal account called Paul Franz, where you can follow me there and see about technology and being Catholic and that kind of stuff. So that's there. And also have my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. Steve Cole is busy working, of course, on the blogs, as he usually does. BBS reduction, which, you know, because they had a problem with too many messages that they had, so they had to trim some of the older ones. And then, of course, he's been working on Merchants of Federation, which is awesome to hear. And also, Call to Arms Starfleet book number version two. And then Steve Petrick was working on SFB updates, as he does. And also the Tholian Master Starship book, which is always awesome to see. Gene's been busy talking to people on Facebook and keeping that live and active. And, of course, making sure there's no spam on the BBS. And also proofreading the stuff that Steve Cole was working on, which was the Merchants of the Federation. Moving onward to the SFB Online Tournament that's currently running, which is the Sapphire Star 1 tournament. And currently we're on round two. We have two of the four games have been completed. So good to see some good progress. And given that we should be doing this completely and get it done within almost like 2 months, this should be the round two should be completed by next week. So next time you hear my voice, you should see, no matter what, round two done. Well, unless some people don't complete the round two game, in which case they might be kicked out, and then we have to have someone come in. Now, moving on to the library report for this week. We actually have some good progress. I worked with Frank LeMay. He went on vacation and came back and forgot what I taught him to do. So, I reminded him and he went, okay, oh, cool. And he got that stuff done, which in this case was the counters and what needs to be done for those so that we could actually get some progress on the third gens. And actually what he did do work on, he did some wonderful work on the ISC. And so now we've got a completed conversion up to 2,497, only three more to go to 2,500 even. Awesome. And yet to be converted is 833. That means we're up to a percentage complete of 74.98%, almost 75% there. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Barry. We were hoping, beyond all hope, that Peter Bakio could show up because he is Mr. Alunda, and that's one thing we'll be discussing at the moment. Just to let you know, Russ, YouTube. Okay, one quick thing before we start. That is one thing about YouTube. YouTube no longer allows a quick hangouts. It allows me to stream my screen without having a video camera watching my face. Because at the moment, I don't have a video camera that's connected to this computer. So I'd have to do some minor things to deal with that. So at the moment, what I'm doing with YouTube is I'm recording using OBS. I am going to be converting it from the format that OBS creates, and then I'm uploading it to YouTube after I do some minor bit of editing on that stream, on that video. So it should be interesting to see how that turns out and see how that's okay, because of the whole thing with, you know, they removed Hangouts from Google. Thank you very much. Yeah. But anyway, so right now I'm streaming both using TalkShoe for audio, and for video I'm using Twitch. So if you want to listen to me over at Twitch, you can do that, twitch.tv, and the stream, just look for SFU On Call and you will find it there. So it should be interesting. I was discussing before the show started with Barry about the possibility, of course, dropping Talk Show together, because I'm having problems with dialing in. And I already talked about this last week, which is about, I'll use free conference, because that seems to be what they're using. Then I realized last week that was not such a good idea, just because of that's what they're using. That's probably, if I'm having problems dialing in, it's because they're using freeconference.com. And I know. I don't even have to even think about it, because I know what would happen if I actually squawk at the TalkShoe people. They just say, "Oh, just, you know, go through the browser. You know, record through the browser." It's like, no, I don't want to record through the browser. I don't want to stream completely through the browser. Actually, at this point, I can do that because of I'm using OBS to stream to Twitch. And in theory, I should be able to use OBS to stream to YouTube. But unfortunately, last week, it went all sideways, just because of they had just switched off Hangouts as of August 1st, which was last Thursday. Yay. Unfortunately, there have been no updates to tutorials or whatever on how to connect OBS to YouTube live stream. In theory, I should be able to do that. So at the moment, I'm just, forget it. This week, at the very least, I'm going to use Twitch. I might just switch over completely to, you know, do what I used to do with YouTube Live, to switch over to be completely Twitch and just upload things to YouTube. I'll just have to wait and see how that turns out. Obviously, one of the minor issues that I'm currently having with that approach is that YouTube doesn't get the video for at least another day, because I have to take the video, I have to convert it to a proper format, and I have to do some minor editing, and then I have to upload it. So, and usually it's pretty late by the time I get done the podcast, so it usually takes me maybe an extra day at the moment. That was last week. I'll see if I can get it done a little faster this week, because I now know what tools I need to do the conversion. So we'll just have to wait and see. But in the meantime, we're going to have a wonderful time talking to Barry about the Orlando, you know, and maybe, just maybe, Peter Bakia, our resident expert on Orlando, would actually be able to at least email me about, after listening to the podcast, saying, you know, you got this wrong. These are some of the tactics that you totally miss, which is, that would not be that abnormal. I probably don't think that's going to be that abnormal. But anyhow, because I'm not that familiar with the tactics, I'm not sure how well Barry is. We'll find out soon enough. I've got Barry muted at the moment, so you can't talk about that. But we will be doing it, I promise you. So, in with that, I will bring in Barry. Hey, Barry.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. I'm doing good.
Okay. So, you learned that it's an interesting ship. In some ways, it's pretty standard, but in other ways, it's not. It's not quite as out there is, say, a Andromedan or a Soltra, but it's got some different things to it. Got a uses standard shields, it uses standard warp, uses standard impulse, it uses standard ATRs. The batteries are different, the weapons are different, and it's got two systems that nobody else has.
Oh, yeah.
The first thing to notice about the batteries is that it's a three-box battery.
Right.
On the tournament cruiser.
Mm-hmm.
And each box in the battery can hold 5 points of power. But you can only pull power from one box at a time, per turn. So you could get the 15 points of power out of the battery, but it'll take you three turns to do it. And then you can only use ATRs to recharge the adrenaline batteries.
Okay, so you actually can, in addition to the normal automatic recharging of the batteries, you can actually put in energy yourself.
Yes, you can use your ATRs to recharge it. The whole box of all three combined regenerates 1 point of power per turn, not 1 point of power per box per turn. So it's not like you're getting 3 points of power per turn, you're getting one. So it's basically another source of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But because it can only be charged with APR power, it means that ship has no reserve warp, no reserve impulse. So that is a limitation on it, which is not it's just something you have to work with.
Right, definitely, especially given that means there is no unplotted mid-turn speed changes.
Correct.
And when it comes to tax, if you do it, And ED, emergency deceleration, for those folks who don't know what that means.
You are not turning, you're not tacking, you're not moving, you're stuck in that
spot
for the rest of the turn.
Yeah, stuck just facing.
You can't even rotate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed, which definitely makes things difficult. If you don't need to rotate, you're...
Also, if you hit the tournament boundary... Same thing.
Right.
Yeah. So somebody who grabs you in a tractor and pushes you into the wall, you're not moving. The weapons, and Peter and I have been going back and forth about this one for years and years, and it's been a long time since I last talked to him about it. But balancing the ship in terms of the number of bio bolts, which is the primary weapon system on the ship. And I think the original tournament cruiser I was given had 10 bio bolts on it. And I think we played with a version that had 12. And I think 12 is a little overkill and 10 is not enough. We're trying to figure out where to put things.
Right. Understood.
But the bio bolts, interestingly enough, they are hit on torps or drones, but they are not hit on phasers.
Hmm.
So,
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Could make it really hard to kill.
And well, you can hit it on a torp or a drone. So
yeah, understood. But at the same time, phasers are the most numerous when it comes to hits, when it comes to the first two columns.
Correct.
So that makes that, when it comes to the bio bolts are a lot more, they last longer, basically. But of course, also...
Well, you have a lot of them.
Right. And it seems like... the plasma whips, which are, they're free when it comes to energy, But the problem is that you only can fire once every turn. Once every 32 impulses. That's a little different than once every turn. Yes. And they don't do that much damage.
Correct.
That's what they never.
Well,
I forgot to read up on the PCGs.
Yeah, the PCG is it doesn't do any damage.
It's I forgot. That's the cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So getting back to the bio bolts, so they do they can damage plasmas just like phasers. So they're essentially the phasers of the ship.
Right. Or your heavy weapons. With the number of them, that makes sense.
How much? Yeah. And you can put a half a point, 1 point, 2 points, or 4 points of power into each bio bolt. And there is a ship-wide capacitor. And the capacitor does not get damaged. The only way to even do anything to the capacitor is to blow up the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you never lose any capacitor. So you could lose 9 of your 10 biovolts and your capacitor is completely intact. In fact, you could lose all 10 of them and your capacitor is still intact. And then it's just a matter of repairing enough biovolts to shoot with it.
Right. Here's the interesting part about biovolts is that capacitor. The capacitor is not tied to a biobolt, meaning that if a biobolt is destroyed, the capacitor is not also destroyed.
Correct. And there is no limit to the capacity of the capacitor.
Right.
If you had 100 points of power, you could put 100 points into it. It doesn't care.
Agreed. The weird part for me was that it's one of those things that's not explicit in the rules, which is it doesn't say at the time of firing, you basically select the amount of energy that you're going to be putting into the weapon. It says, okay, the procedure is the total number of damage points scored by a bio-bolt is determined by the range, the energy in the weapon, and the dice roll. So basically what happens is that from the capacitor, you fill the energy, a certain amount of energy into the bio bolt, and then you fire it.
Correct.
But that's one of the things that it's never explicitly mentioned. It's just an assumption because it's a capacitor.
Yeah. So the way we've been using it is, let's say I have 12 points of power in the capacitor. I can fire, and let's say I've got 6 bio bolts in arc that I want to fire. I can fire them as half point energy, in which case I'm pulling 3 points of power out of the cap. I fire them as 1 point. I can fire them as 2s, or I can fire them as a mixture. So some of them are different energy levels. I choose which ones, and then I pull the appropriate amount of power out of the capacitor.
Right.
Yeah.
I was just mentioning in the rules, it's not explicit. Actually, I did real quick check on the discussion board, and it does not mention, no one's actually brought up that issue.
It didn't seem like it was a relevant issue. It's always, that was the assumption, is that, I've got 12 power in my capacitor.
See, that's something that usually SFB.
This one. Right. I just haven't have enough power to cover it.
Barry, the thing is that normally with SFB, they don't like assumptions. They like explicitly stating it in the rule. Usually, if it's not explicitly stated in the rule, it does not. You cannot do that.
Well, how else would you use?
I understand.
Yeah.
That we can do that assumption. We can do that implicit logic, but there's nothing that says that's how it works. You know?
Hmm. I had never noticed that. Interesting. Let me.
Yeah.
Look at the.
Because they mentioned that, okay, that there's
off a common capacitor organ in the ship.
Right.
Energy to arm the capacitor. But the reserve power may be added to it during the turn. Firing procedure. Total number of damage points scored. Range.
And the energy and the weapon. This is yeah.
The energy and the weapon. Interesting.
Yeah. It never tells you how you get the energy in the weapon. The assumption is it comes from the capacitor, which is the way it works for like phasers and so forth.
Well, it says in the intro that and run off of a power storage organ that is functionally similar to the electric organ. Interesting. Bioelectric bolts draw off of a common capacitor organ. This capacitor has no maximum amount of amount of power it can store for use in any given turn. It loses half of the energy stored in it during the repair stage of the record keeping phase after repairs are announced.
Right. It's something along the lines of what the Saltorian particle cannons do, which is it requires that you put half amount of power that's in the capacitor. You have to charge it to hold the other half.
Well, this is a little different. I can put zero power into the capacitor, and it loses half its power. So I can...
Oh, okay, you're right. You're right. So it...
Yeah.
It,
so
unless
it's not
unless
like
you actually put...
holding energy, and it's just...
Right.
Yeah, just half the energy goes away.
Yeah, it dissipates half the energy every single turn. Okay. Oh,
yes.
That's an interesting way of doing that, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, moving on.
So basically, the more power I put in, the less accurate it is, but the more damage it does. And if I put 4 points of power in, it's a killer kick-ass weapon. It can do more damage than an overloaded disruptor.
Oh yeah, they can do up to 12 points of power, 12 points of damage. Of course, that requires 4 points of power.
Yeah, it takes 4 points of power.
And it's range 2.
Capacitor. Well, there is no, let's see. At range 2 it does 12 points of damage.
Right.
At range 4 it does 11.
Right.
At range 7 it's still doing 10.
Right.
But,
and also, it's the good thing about it is it's 2d6.
Yes.
So even with a 7, it has greater than a 50% chance of hitting.
Correct. Slightly better than a 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't got those that the percentages figured out. But I'm pretty sure
like
it's a little bit. I'm pretty sure it's above 50%.
Like 3.5. What's that?
I'm pretty sure it's above 50%.
It's above 50%. It's above 50%. But it's not like four. It's like not like a hit number of four, or 1, 2, or 3, or 4. It's like 1, 2, 3, or 3.5.
Right. It's not 2/3.
Right. At range 4, it is 2/3, roughly.
Yep.
But, the 4 point of energy. Now, when you use it in 4 energy mode, it takes longer. It cannot be fired the next turn.
Right.
Whereas up to 2 points of power, it can be fired the following
Which is
turn.
Interesting about that. One thing I read that and said, okay, it says, quote, a BB fired at 4-point level of arming must cool for the entire turn after the turn which it has fired. Okay, so basically, you fire it, then you have to wait for a whole turn, and then the turn after that. So if you fire on turn one, you can't fire again until turn three.
Correct. But you could fire it on impulse 32 of turn one and fire it on impulse one of turn three.
Right, right.
Yeah. The two energy mode, there's only one place where that makes any sense, and that would be at ranges 8 through 12. Because
I disagree with that. And here's why I disagree. The reason why I disagree with that is because of the good thing about two points of energy is that yes, it doesn't do nearly as much damage as a 4-point. You know, less than half.
Yeah.
But
right.
You can fire it every turn.
Yes. Yes, you can. If you go to one point of energy, it's certainly, let's say you look at range 5 through 7, you get 3 points of damage for 1 point of energy and 4 points of damage for 2 points of energy. But the 1 point of energy is a better hit number.
That's true.
So you get much better hit numbers with 1 point of energy. And if you have, say, 4 points of energy, you're going to do far better firing 4 bio bolts at 1 energy than 2 at 2 energy.
Good point. The only time that which makes it so that the only time you'd want to actually fire with 2 points of energy is when you don't have that many weapons left, either because it got blown off the ship or if the other ones are it's fired already.
Correct. Correct.
And you need and you want those extra points.
Yeah. Yeah. But and it gets the less energy you put into the weapon each shot, the more efficient it gets.
So
That's an interesting thing. And it damages plasmas. Now, the plasma whips are... That's actually, I think, one of the best weapons on the ship. They don't have any energy cost.
Right.
You see the damage table on there, which is... not bad. I mean, it's not as good as a P3, but it's not bad. But it does double damage against unshielded objects.
Whoa. I missed that.
Yeah. Yep.
I completely...
If the target is unshielded, or strikes a down shield, the damage is doubled.
Yikes! I missed it.
If the shield is up when the weapon hits or reinforcement is struck, the number of hits which penetrate as internals are doubled.
Wow.
If multiple different weapons strike a shield in the same volley, damage from any plasma weapon in the volley is...
first. The plasma weapon...
after.
Huh? Scored after
damage.
Yeah, those beams, but before all other shield damage.
Although, yeah.
So it's before like fate like. Plasma bolts.
Oh wait, no. If multiple different weapons strike a shield in the same impulse, damage for any plasma weapon is scored after these particular weapons,
right?
But before all other shield damage. Okay, so it hits first,
right?
Okay, so that's not as bad,
right? It's not like
still the double damage,
right? It's not like a Hellbore. But yeah, the double damage when it comes to internals is nasty.
Especially against drones or fighters or shuttles. It's killer.
Or any missiles.
Yes.
You know, whether it's, think about some of the ones.
Tachyon missiles.
Yeah, tachyon missiles. That was one of the ones I was trying to think of.
Yeah. Yeah, and even at range two, it can kill a drone a 2/3 chance.
Yep.
And has a shot of killing a, at range one, it has a 50-50 shot of killing a large drone. And this is for a weapon that fires for no energy cost every 32 impulses with a 360-degree arc.
Yep. Now, that's the one. That's one of those gotchas there, which is the 32 impulses.
Yeah. Now, the other interesting thing is that you have to use reserve power, but 1/4 point turns it into a whipcrack torpedo, which is a 5-point plasma torpedo, which does not lose strength from range. And its range is 16 hexes. That's freaking long range.
Oh, that is. I agree.
So that torpedo, it's a plasma torpedo. It goes out at range 16. It's still 5 points of damage. 17 range, it goes away. Now, if you hit it with a phaser, of course, it gets damaged just like any other plasma torpedo. But that ship has 20 points of plasma. It can fire every single turn for a single point of power with decent range.
Yep.
360-degree arc.
Yeah, a quarter.
That is nasty.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those plasma whips / whipcrack torpedoes, that's a nasty system. Of course, it has to take reserve. It takes reserve power only to fire it.
Right. Yeah, this means you have to make sure that your adrenaline batteries are charged. I think you might have mentioned it, but I might have missed it. When it comes to adrenaline batteries, one thing is that you can only do is you only can use one adrenaline battery per turn. So you have to select one,
correct,
and then you just use that one for that turn.
Correct.
Okay. So no matter whether it has one point of power or 5 points of power, that it is what it is.
Right. Now, what it doesn't say is, does that mean you select one and you can only charge and discharge that one? Or does it mean that you can charge them all a little bit and only discharge from one? The rules don't really say.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you 1 point of power goes into the whole 3-point battery system every turn. But you almost have to keep track of each battery individually.
Agreed. And which to me, it's kind of weird about this ship, mm-hmm, in that you have to keep track of the individual boxes separately, correct?
Correct.
Which means I'm not sure why there's one little quirk about the SSD that I don't understand, which is why aren't they numbered? Like the Andromedans.
Ah.
The Andromedans, they have their batteries numbered.
You're right.
Now, because I know with the Andromedans, you need to keep track of the individual batteries and how much energy is in each. Because of the whole problem that if a battery is destroyed, all the energy in that battery is destroyed with it.
Yes. Right. But with the Andromeda, you can transfer energy between one battery and another willy-nilly. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah, there's no limitation about transferring energy between battery boxes on an Andra. This one, it doesn't stay. So they probably need to clarify the rules on the batteries.
Oh, agreed, agreed.
Yeah. And the next system to discuss is the ARF, the attractor repulsor field.
Ah, yes, ARF.
And that one, ARF, yeah. Let me reread that one.
The obviously the tough part about the ARFs are they cost 4 points of power. Also,
yeah,
they can fire up to range 5, and you roll a 1. If you roll 1 to 4 to hit, at range 5, it's effective to range 5. If you roll 5 to 6, it's only effective to range 3. So, but if the target's at range 5, basically you missed.
Yes.
That's what that means.
If it's over 3, you missed.
Right. And then you have to decide when you fire it, is it going to be pushing or is it going to be pulling?
Correct.
Now, of course, there's an issue with that, which is if you're pulling, it keeps pulling until you turn it off or until range 0.
Correct.
And if you're pushing, it will push it all the way out to range 5. All the way out to range 6.
It'll push it out to range 6.
And then die.
Right.
Now,
right.
The one thing that I think you mentioned last week, but it's not true, which is you can't push someone into a terminant barrier.
Oh, I know you can push someone to a terminant barrier.
No, you cannot.
I didn't realize that. You can't?
Not with an ARF.
Oh, can I? Okay. Oh, it can not force it into a terminant barrier. Oh,
yeah, because this is not a tractor.
Okay, you can't. Okay.
Yeah. I was reading through the rules.
Oh, you know, I got myself confused. If somebody is slipping against the wall or facing the wall and slipping so that they don't hit the wall,
mm-hmm.
and you push them so that if you push them in the right direction, it does not reset their slip mode. So now they're up against the wall and they haven't satisfied their slip mode. Now their next movement, they're going to ram the wall.
Hmm.
So you can do that.
Okay. I have to check.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, So I have seen people get pushed into the wall that way. But it's been so long, I forgot about that.
Ooh. Barry, let's get back to the adrenaline batteries. I was just reading a little reading on them.
Yeah.
Here's what it says. Each adrenaline gland, not each box, each gland.
Yes.
Recovers 1 point of power each turn free of charge, which can be placed in any box in that gland except a box which power was drawn on that turn. If no such box exists, there's no restoration occurs.
Okay.
Restoration occurs at the end of the turn, but da 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 da.
Okay. Well, the tournament cruiser has one gland with three boxes in it.
Right.
But I think the dreadnought has a second gland.
Mm-hmm.
But since we're only talking about the tournament cruiser, it only can get 1 point of power per turn. So what you do is the first turn, you suck one of the batteries dry. And then turn 2, you start using the second battery or second battery box.
Right.
And at the end of turn two, the first battery box can get its free point of power.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you can just arrange by rotating things around it. You're going to get one point of power per turn out of that system. But you're not going to get it on the first turn. And you're basically not going to have it usable on the second turn. Although, to tell you the truth, you got five. Turn one, you have 5 points of power to use extra. And turn two, you have 5 points of power extra. So, yeah. Now, the ARS, as I said, 4 points of power to arm, 2 points to hold. But it's, and I think it stays up for, what, 10 impulses?
Yeah, maximum of 10 impulses.
Yeah, and that is such a nice way of saying to somebody, you're not going to tractor, you're not going to pull me in, you're not going to anchor me. So if somebody's trying to anchor, go for the anchor tactic, not going to happen with the Alunda. Although the way to get around that is just to, oh, okay, he's pushing me away. You can try to push yourself away from him and try to get to range six, which turns off, so he doesn't get the full 10 impulses of push. But the attraction is also nice in that you can use that to, if somebody's trying to get away.
Oh, agreed. I totally agree there.
Yeah, you can say, nah, come back here. Let me pick you up a little more.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so nice to be able, it is really nice to use that to control the relative facings between you and your opponent. Because I think the movement occurs after regular movement, but before weapons fire.
Yeah, where is it? I was just reading that earlier.
Yeah.
Where is it? Da-da-da. I know it's there. Beginning the impulse after the field was seized, the unit moves one hex. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, this is treated as involuntary movement as occurs in step 6A1 of the movement segment of the impulse procedure. The movement takes place before black hole movement, and it's treated as black hole movement for all purposes. If there is a choice, which hex, but okay, which just says, okay, the person who actually is using it, the ARF, defines where the target goes, not the target.
Yeah, yeah. It's also nice for pulling somebody into your suicide shuttle.
That is true.
I launched two suicide shuttles. Ah, I'm running away from you. No, right. You're not.
And
come here.
And because it's not a tractor, that means that there is no tunnel.
Correct.
So that the
you can't can wild weasel.
Well, also you can't destroy the shuttle.
Right.
Because if it's caught in that tractor tunnel, if the movement's they're going too fast, that shuttle gets destroyed because of the tractor tunnel.
Right, right. Although if somebody does raise a tractor, it can shut down the ARF. Well, I think the ARF can't overpower the shuttle. If you use an ARF to pull somebody towards you and they manage to tractor you, you're locked in position.
Right.
until the tractors are staffed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got some interesting tactical implications to it.
Oh, I agree.
The PCG, on the other hand, is it takes a huge amount of energy to operate, and it really doesn't give you that much benefit.
Mm-hmm.
5 points of energy, 3 to hold. It's like, I've never seen anybody actually use it because it's like too expensive.
Oh, understood.
So,
it requires 5 points of energy for any source. This could be either allocated or reserve.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You can do the whole contingency power. That's good to see.
You could.
Oh, actually, no. Actually, the power short, the plasma cogenerator can be undercharged and fire with less energy, but this generates fewer cloud hexes. A PCG armed with 3 points of energy will generate only the first 4 hexes of the cloud. PCG armed with 1 point of energy will regenerate the first hex of the cloud. So, in theory, it could be kind of cheap. Doesn't have to be 5 points of power. Depends on how many hexes you want to generate.
Well, so what is the effect on seeking weapons? Let me go take a look.
Seeking weapons that hit a unit located within the plasma cloud roll basically the normal cloaking adjustment roll, as though the target were cloaked. If the target unit is cloaked, roll twice on the chart.
But here's the problem with that. You generate it behind you.
Understood.
So the seeking weapon goes through it. Does it degrade the seeking weapon when it goes through it? Or only if it hits while it's in it?
Okay. Seeking weapons with FP rule numbers, plasma implosion, talk about it, suffer effects of 4 points of phaser damage per cloud hex traversed.
Okay.
And drone type weapons, tachyon missiles and drones, count each impulse in a cloud. Each impulse in a cloud as 2 impulses that were against the range or endurance.
Which is almost meaningless.
Right.
So it has virtually no effect on drones.
The only time, unless it's dogfight, of course.
Right.
But why would you fire dogfight at a Lunda host ship? Got me.
So I guess against plasma torpedoes, it has a minor effect.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you have the full blown plasma cloud generator and a plasma torpedo has to go through 3 hexes of it, it takes 12 points and 6 off the warhead.
Right.
For 5 points of energy.
But then
that's not too terribly effective.
And then of course there's OG3.141. Any unit in the cloud itself is protected by the cloud. If the line of fire from one unit to another passes through a cloud hex, including the cloud the hex the firing unit is in, is degraded by the cloud. The number of cloud hexes which the fire must pass, including hexes of either the firing ship or the targeting ship, is if located in a cloud hex. This quantity is used for various effects. If both units are in the same hex, this is considered one cloud hex. Note that it does not matter that the hexes being counted are from one cloud or several, and line which passes between two hexes of cloud generated by one PCG and three hexes generated by another would count as five for protection rules. Direct fire that hit a ship obscured by a plasma cloud suffer a penalty of 3 points of ECM for every hex of cloud they pass through.
Right. And in addition, each cloud hex counts as two hexes for determining the effective range of the target.
Yep.
So, seeking weapon or direct fire weapons are pretty badly degraded.
Right.
But,
especially the more hexes you can get, the better protected you are. Because one hex would be basically a plus one. A shift of one.
Right.
Two hexes, a shift plus of two on the roll.
Yes. Plus.
Plus the additional range.
Right. But there's no penalty for traveling through the cloud.
Right. For a regular ship.
Correct. So, okay, he spent all that energy on a cloud. I'll just run through it. It's not like a web or anything like that.
Right. Well, in my mind, this, again, we're getting back to the way the Omega Octant ships were designed. In my mind, a lot of the weapons, at least some of the weapons, are kind of obviously were designed to be used in concert with a fleet, not single ship duels.
Yeah.
And this is just one of those weapons. Yes, you can actually use it in a single ship duel, especially in the case if you have a down shield.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it at longer range so that you can bring a down shield around without having your opponent firing at you because of because of the ECM. Basically, what might have given you some damage now will possibly give you none whatsoever.
That is true. As I said, I've never seen anybody actually use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I said, the one tactical situation I can see in the duel is having a down shield that you have to bring around. And the question is, how? I'm assuming you've played Peter.
Yes.
Has he ever gotten to the situation where he's been running away from you and has a down shield that he has to keep away from you?
Well, obviously. But look at the firing arcs of the weapons on that ship.
I mean, this has to be at range.
Shield away from you that are... What's that?
This has to be at range. This can't be at saber dancing range. This has to be like longer ranges is what I'm thinking. Basically, it stops the pot shots.
Yeah.
That you could possibly do.
Right. Still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it died for a second.
Okay.
As I said, by the point you would need to fire it, you probably got better uses for that power anyway.
Possibly.
That's a lot of power to use.
Well, but the same thing, Barry. The one thing that was pointed out after we read the rules was that it doesn't require 5 points of power. You can
Undercharge it.
You can undercharge it, and still get great benefit. In the case of 3 points, you still get four hexes. You get those first four hexes, and that's not bad at all. Especially, as I said, at the longer ranges, the full five points of power to get all the hexes, you know, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. And definitely I can,
yeah.
This is one of those ones that, as again, it's really optimized for fleet battles. In this case, big surprise. It's meant for as a disengagement tool, a way of escaping yeah. with your ship intact.
Yeah.
This is not like
yeah.
a Tholian web, where the whole idea of a Tholian web is that you stand your ground. Say, come on, mm-hmm. come on, come to me, come to me. I've got the stronger defensive position. No, this is more of
this
I need
is,
to run away.
I'm running. I'm disengaging. I'm covering my ass.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
that would be interesting, actually. Retrograde.
Yeah.
For a Londa ship. Because what are you doing? You fire since the cloud hex behind you, and then you back right past, right through it.
Yes, that would be a way to help use it.
So, wow. That definitely could benefit you in the case of after you stop, you know, trying to get started again.
Yeah.
So actually, the funny part is that if you had the power, that might not mm-hmm. be a bad thing if you had to, not if you had to, but yeah, if you had to run into the tournament barrier where you stop,
yeah.
you can't turn, but you have the cloud to at least put up a barrier so that...
Sun protection.
Right.
Yeah.
This gets some protection. Yes.
Yeah.
Especially because, let me look at this, because I think the cloud... One hex. Okay, no, it's directly behind. Okay, the impulse the device is activated. One hex of plasma is created, and hex directly behind the ship. So it's not created. So it's in the same hex as the ship. It's one hex behind the ship. Okay,
correct.
I was hoping the same hex. Could that be? Well, that would be a benefit.
Yeah, but.
But it's not the way it works, unfortunately.
No.
Nope. Yeah, the Londa can be a nasty ship. And the turn mode's not that bad. It's turn mode of C.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt about it. I've never seen Peter lose in that ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, having said that, Peter's a really good player.
Right. See, that's what I was kind of hit on, which is that if someone's flying the ship against Peter, will they win? Meaning?
More often than not.
Well, the important point I'm trying to make is that is it that the Londa is too strong, or is it just that Peter's a good player?
I think it's a little of both.
Yeah, well, the only way to obviously test that is we have to test the ship with someone other than Peter.
Yeah. Right. The one with 10 biobolts felt like it was not quite powerful enough, but 12 was way overkill.
Okay, so you're saying 10 is not quite enough?
Yeah, 10 wasn't quite enough. It was having issues. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't have the offensive punch.
Okay. No, I think, right now, the current one that I pulled up now, this one is from, I think, 3 years ago. I'm pretty sure it's 2016 that you sent me. I grabbed that out of my email, which is the one I'm showing right now on the screen for people.
I had a discussion with Peter when we both went to Council of Five Nations, and I quick created that ship and posted it after a discussion with Peter after that council. And mm-hmm. Does that have 12 bio bolts?
No, it has 10.
Has 10. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then we were probably playing a 12 bio bolt one, and it's like, it's a little too powerful.
Yeah. Which means I prefer it to be 10 then. I'd rather have it a little less powerful and maybe make up for it in tactics.
Yeah.
Wait and see, because Lord knows we don't want something that's over powerful, because that's usually harder to tweak, because it can ruin more games than not. But we still have a lot of work when it comes to the Omega tournament as it stands.
Right. Now, one of the interesting things about Bio Bolt ships is that you can run in and you don't have to worry about, if he fires before me, or he calls for fire, if he fires and I don't, he's going to blow off some weapons and then I won't be able to hit him hard. So do I fire also or wait to get closer and fire?
Right.
With the bio bolts, you have less pressure to fire under those circumstances. It's like, okay, he blew off two or three bio bolts. I still have the same amount of energy in my capacitor. So instead of firing 8 at strength 1 or 2, I fire 6 or 5, but at higher energy levels. Yeah, I'm going to do a little bit less damage, but not as much less as another ship that took weapons damage.
Understood.
That is a nice feature of the Bio Bolt, is that you can adjust based on how many you still have left.
Mm-hmm. And definitely, personally, that's one thing I do like, which is weapons that use capacitors, because it gives greater flexibility.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The other thing about the Alunda is it can pretty much fight out of any shield facing. Remember, you've got these bio bolts that can do the damage, more damage than an overloaded disruptor. You've got some that are a number of them that can fire to the rear.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. There's
That's a heck of a lot of firepower all the way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the rear, I'm looking at it, I'm trying to calculate real quick them. Yeah, the sides, you can get like 4 bio bolts for each side. Rear, you can get like 3 per shield.
Yeah.
After you get off outside the forward extended arc.
Right.
And then, of course, the forward arc
that's
is
still a lot.
The forward arc, you've got 6.
Yeah.
And if you're directly in front, center line, that's 8 of them.
Yeah.
So, to say the very least, a person going against the Alunda, Ship, do not get yourself centerlined.
Yeah. Oh, of course, if you've got yourself centerlined, if he tries to, if he puts a lot of power into the capacitor, he's not moving very quickly.
Agreed, but invariably, what do you do with capacitors? You charge them, at least to a certain degree, on off turns. When you, either on a turn that you had planned on not fighting them, you want to do a little repair work, or that's the way it happens. He ran away, and you're chasing him, but you can't get him, so you're just. Ends up being just a charge turn.
Well, except for the fact that it's a leaky capacitor and it leaks pretty badly.
Oh, understood. I trust me, I do understand that. But still, that if you put energy back into the capacitor, you can actually keep it charged and for less cost than using that same amount of energy every single turn.
Yes.
That's a strange way of thinking about it, which is if you fire three weapons for 12, let's say 4 points per, that's 12 points of energy that you actually have to allocate for. But if that's on,
yeah.
If you had 12 points of energy that you put in on turn one, and you don't fire until turn two, and you just have to put 6 points of energy into the capacitor. Now those 12-point weapons only cost you six.
Right.
For that turn anyway. Because it's like anything else. Let's say that you charge a disruptor and you weren't able to use it for a turn. Well, it's wasted energy. While at the very least
wasted.
The bio bolt, it's into a capacitor, so only half the energy is actually wasted.
Yeah.
So I agree. London is quite an interesting ship. Has many tactical implications because of the many things that it can do, especially those nasty little plasma whips, which are, I missed that part about the double damage.
Yeah.
That just can be freaking nasty as heck. And as you pointed out, they're 360 degrees. So, and of course, then you have the whip crack torpedoes.
Shuttles don't survive too well in range of them.
No.
Shuttles and fighters.
Yeah, they'll just die, and the worst thing is that they cost no energy.
Yeah.
Can you imagine trying, assuming that Delenda holds back, trying to get a suicide shuttle through and actually hit the ship.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't think the bio bolts are considered heavy weapons for firing at smaller targets.
Correct.
Okay. Bang.
I know.
Definitely one of the stronger ships in the Omega.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
Okay. Well, I think with that, we will wrap up for this evening.
I think so. What are we going to talk about for next week's ship?
Okay. What do we got left? I know one of them's Drex.
Did we do the Warb?
No, we Drex. Have not done the Warb.
Yes, the Drex. We have not done the Warp. We can do the Drex. I've actually got more playtest time on the Drex. That was an interesting ship.
Okay. Then we'll hit on the Drex next week.
Okay.
Did you ever send me a tournament ship for the Drex?
There is one on the client.
Okay. Then you did. Okay. I will make sure that I have that picture available so that people can see it when we are streaming this.
Okay.
Okay. Well, you have a good night.
You too. Good night.
Bye. Bye. So, nice discussion with Barry about this wonderful Alunda ship, and Lord knows, nasty little sucker. To me, the weirdness is I'm seeing these ships, I'm seeing these weapons, and I'm going, and they had difficulties with the Andromedans? I don't know what it is, Maybe, okay, I honestly haven't tried flying a normal Andromedan ship against an Omega, because in theory, the Andromedan ships, Andromedans did quite well against them until they had the gunships. So just have to, I'll probably have to play it out one time and see how that all that works. It should be interesting. Oh yeah, Dave pointed out that the four we have not hit is the Rin, the Warb, the Drex, and the Soldra. The Rin, no. I don't think we're going to... we might discuss the Rin, but the Rin is definitely not going to be in the tournament at all, just because it's such a specialized ship. It's designed mainly for within its own, the Rin cluster. Outside the cluster, it don't work. Actually, the Rin. Yeah, isn't that... Wait a minute. The Rin, isn't that part of the Otholian Galaxy? Weren't they that? I'd have to check. But anyhow, get back. So it'd be interesting. We'll hit the Drex. The Drex are nasty little suckers. Okay. I'll take a look. See. Right. The Rin had no engines. They transport everything. They actually transport the ships, and they did that within the Rin cluster. Yeah, it's really kind of crazy stuff. But anyhow, with that, I think we will wrap up for this evening. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.